Good evening and welcome to Solutions with Dr. Mark Pitstick, your heavenly host. Solutions answering those age-old questions. Who are we? Why are we here? What happens after we die? What about God, heaven, and hell? And most importantly, once we really know we are souls, how might we best live and treat one another? Tonight's guest, another wonderful treat. As you know, in the past we've had people like Dr. Ken Ring and Raymond Moody talking about near-death experiences, Dr. Brian Weiss talking about past life regressions. Well, tonight's guest is a pioneer in exploring that time period, the events between incarnations, what I coin in my book, BIEs, between incarnation experiences. This is Michael Newton, PhD. He's the author of Journey of Souls and recently released his second book, Destiny of Souls. Dr. Newton has a PhD in counseling psychology and is a certified master hypnotherapist. He's been on the faculty of several colleges and has his own private practice. I'm most happy to have Dr. Newton with us tonight because I consider his first book, Journey of Souls, to be one of the most important books I've read in my life. It's one of those that answered dozens of questions that I'd had since I was a little child, things I wondered about, and page after page just answered those. Dr. Newton, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
So many questions I want to ask you, so we'll go with kind of a short answer format, although I know some of these are deep topics, so take as long as you need. First of all, why are we here on Earth, and are the reasons the same for everyone?
Well, essentially, we are here on Earth, Mark, in order to work on issues of karma in terms of our own development that stretch over many, many lifetimes, perhaps thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
I remember very well a client that I had who took him 4,000 years to conquer jealousy. And I can report that this man is not jealous today. He has problems with intolerance, and that's his current issue, along with a number of others.
Mm.
But we come through to Earth and join these bodies in order for us to work out these karmic issues that we need to work on. And each of us is different in our own way. There's certain commonalities, of course, to all of us in terms of learning how to love and kindness and tolerance and these sorts of things. But I find in my practice that every person is a unique individual because their immortal soul character has joined with a human body with a given temperament and a certain type of brain to produce one temporary personality in one lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what we have to work with.
And another basic question before we get into more specifics. As you know, there's so many seemingly senseless tragedies on our planet, and sometimes it's so hard to believe there's a divine hand or a divine perfection behind it, but is that your belief from your research?
Yes, you know, the haunting aspect of any human tragedy, Mark, whether it's individual or multiple, such as a number of people dying together in a plane crash,
mm-hmm.
Is that we wonder if this is just blind chance while a capricious God looks the other way, or is there any meaning behind these events and why we happen to be in a certain place at a certain time? The question is answerable with a client that I might have where I can study the background of that individual through hypnosis regression, which is my specialty.
Right.
And I think the key to understanding it is, what has this individual done before? Why did he join this particular body? Because it was known in advance that he was not going to live perhaps very long.
Mm-hmm.
This individual, by the way, Mark, chose this body of his or her own volition.
Mm-hmm.
In order to enter into a contract assignment to learn certain lessons. So there is an order and purpose about life, which I must tell you really shocked me in the beginning when I came into the New Age movement kicking and screaming, because I did not believe in purpose. Years and years ago, before I started this research and made my discoveries, frankly, I was an atheist. I believed in really no major purpose or order in the universe at all. And I think the thing I'd like to get across to you and your listeners is that it was the consistency of reports from so many hundreds of people that I work with that finally convinced me of the kinds of things that I write about in my two books.
Yes. What a comfort. Now, my listeners are pretty aware because we've covered so much of this, but let's just make it real clear. The near-death experiences, people almost die, glimpse the light, but then come back to tell about it. Past life regressions, as Brian Weiss talked about a couple weeks ago, people visit past lives. Your work, again, is that an accurate description, talking about that period in spirit world, on soul side? What happens?
That's right. And you know what's interesting, Mark, is that for so many years, this was considered a limbo state by people who worked in past life regression through hypnosis, that there was nothing really to learn or to be gained by trying to probe that area that seemed to be hazy to people.
Mm-hmm.
I discovered my discoveries in terms of what we do between lives really came about almost by accident by an extremely receptive client. A middle-aged woman came to me with a presenting problem that centered around her feelings of isolation and loneliness. Now, when this woman came to me, being a traditional therapist, in addition to being a specialist in hypnotherapy, I felt that I was dealing with a case with simple depression. I worked with her in terms of her current adult life. I worked with her then in taking her down into hypnosis to look for people that she may have known in her childhood that she missed, and these weren't the kind of people she was looking for. And I continued to run up against a blank wall with this lady. I mean, we even explored a couple of past lives, and a few of her dear friends did crop up. But she kept telling me that she wanted to see them all together, and that wasn't happening. So I didn't realize, Mark, that this highly receptive woman was really taking herself into a deeper state of hypnosis. She was pushing from the subconscious into what I call a superconscious mental state, that is the soul mind. And finally, I asked, was there ever a time in your existence when you were not lonely because you were with a group of friends? Now, I didn't realize the group was a trigger word. And when I commanded her to go there, suddenly she was crying and with her eyes closed pointing to my office wall and telling me, I see them all now in front of me. And I said, where are you? And she said, the spirit world. So my, you know, hair sort of stood up on the back of my neck. I couldn't believe what had happened here. And I reconstructed this case. And from that case, I began working with people more and more in the area between lives until I became a really kind of a specialist in this area, Mark. I just didn't want to do any other kind of work, so I just focused on that aspect of our past experience.
Fascinating. Now, I'm often asked when I do shows, what about people like Hitler? You know, what's life like for him? But before we look at that, let's talk about what would this time in spirit world, learning centers and so on, be like for an, quote, average soul?
Well, you know, in Journey of Souls, my first book, Mark, it was a foundational book. Mm-hmm. I gave an overview on what it was like to go into the spirit world and moving through it, the stops that we made, and all the aspects of our general existence between lives. But I did so in a kind of a general way. No one had ever heard of me in those days. This was 6 years ago. This was my first book. And, you know, I was almost afraid to tell the public too much because I didn't know whether they were going to think I was crazy.
Yeah.
I talked about orientations, our guides, and how we choose a new body and the preparations that we make to come forward into a new life. But in the 6 years between that book and Destiny of Souls, which, as you mentioned at the top of the show, has only been out a couple of months, I had so many requests to please give the public more detail about the spirit world that I might not have mentioned in my first book. And so this is what the second book is all about. It covers areas that I only touched upon in the first book. And so what the new book does is it explains in more detail what our soul group systems are like. When we're together with our spirit groups, these are our soulmates, if you will. What do we do? What is it like going before a council of wise beings and talking to them about our progress? What do we do for recreation? What do we do in the way of learning? And how is our spiritual path on earth affected by our life between lives? So these issues I dealt with in detail with the new book, but I've also tried to design the book, Mark, so that first-time readers will find it enjoyable as well.
Okay. So I know from reading Journey of Souls that there's a healing shower, there's some spiritual counseling, kind of a reorienting period before the soul who's just left Earth or whatever form plane rejoins their soul group. Can you talk a bit about that, please?
Yes, and you also wanted to know a little bit more about evil, too. And I'll just combine both questions. When we cross over, depending on our stage of advancement, Mark, whether we're a beginner or whether we're kind of working into the intermediate stage or a more advanced soul, much depends on our advancement in terms of how we are treated when we first cross over. Not to say that we're ever treated unkindly. That's just not an issue at all.
Mm-hmm.
They're very benevolent beings who are our guides and masters. And so I find that there is more need for an orientation to the spiritual life with a newer soul who's still perhaps in a state of shock from their death, as opposed to someone who's been around for thousands of years. Now, I should say at this junction that I've had worked with souls who have been around since the Stone Age and haven't advanced all that much there, and others that have been perhaps just here a few thousand years that are moving forward very rapidly. So it's like any human classroom, you're going to have students who move more quickly than others.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of those souls who have engaged in wrongdoing or evil acts, and you mentioned Hitler, there is a place where these individuals go to have what they have done analyzed carefully by wise beings who understand that a soul can become contaminated by being in a disoriented human brain, the abnormal behavior patterns that we see with people who have hormonal imbalances, those who perhaps were terribly abused mentally and physically as children, as in the case of Hitler, not offering any excuses for him, by the way.
Welcome back to Solutions. This is Dr. Mark Pitstick, the Soul Man of Talk Radio, and we're here tonight with Dr. Michael Newton, PhD, author of Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls. You can get his book at any good bookstore, or you can call his publisher direct by calling 1-800-THE-MOON. This is Llewellyn Publishing, and those of you on the internet can access by www.llewellyn.com. That's Llewellyn. So again, that's Journey of Souls, Destiny of Souls. As I said, Journey of Souls, one of the most important books I've read in my life, answered many questions, dozens that I had wondered about since I was a little child, and I'm sure Destiny of Souls is every bit as good. I can't wait to read it. So, Dr. Newton, we were talking about some of the possibilities, depending on the state of spiritual development at the time a person passes over. Could you continue with that, please?
Yes. I was about to say that each soul is treated in its own special way depending on the type of life it's lived. And there may be a need to remodel them, so to speak, through orientation, adjust their energy. Others may be taken to places of solitude where they are instructed. There are occasionally, I hear reports of people who never incarnate again on Earth. Their soul, it was just too much for the soul, and so they are assigned to other worlds. So one of the things I do in the new book is talk a little bit about some of our experiences on other worlds and what that is like when we're in between lives in terms of our experience, and what it may be like for those souls who I call hybrid souls, who have incarnated on other worlds before beginning their incarnations on Earth. And this was an area that many, many people asked me about, and I found, too, that the suicide rate among people in past lives who've come to me, who've committed suicide in past lives and have found that this was certainly not a way in which to solve their problems, quite often were hybrids who had found Earth a tremendous shock because they had come from gentler worlds. So there is all sorts of information about the individual soul that is available in everyone's mind, Mark. Naturally, I'm disposed towards working in the field of hypnosis because it's my specialty. And my work requires that I take people very, very deep in hypnosis. This is the only way I'm going to reach their soul mind. So for that reason, I probably only see one person a day, and it's usually a 3 or 4 hour session. I usually only see people one time. So I'm in the process now, by the way, of trying to train others throughout the United States, and I'll be working through the hypnotherapy associations in the next couple of years trying to do that.
Excellent. That was one of my questions. So let's contrast what the spirit world experience might be like for someone like Adolf Hitler versus Mother Teresa. Pretty good extremes.
Well, I think that if you look at Mother Teresa, you've got to realize, even if you know nothing about the spirit world or believe any of this, that here is a highly ascended soul who is probably in their last incarnation or two. Her life exemplifies such humanity that she is kind of a beacon of light for the rest of us. On the other hand, when you've got a soul like a Hitlerian soul, you might well ask, well, why would a person like that ever get a chance to come back? And I don't know that they would. It's quite possible that the Hitlers and Stalins of these world, of this world, may not be coming back to Earth because of the horrendous things that they did. In other words, they were so contaminated. However, I must tell you that I have bumped into souls who have had associations with evil in former lives, and after a long period of reflection, could take hundreds of years of solitude, of remodeling their energy, of working with their guides and masters, they have come back and led productive lives. So I think what I was trying to say a few minutes ago before our break was, none of us are born evil. I think that's an important point that people need to understand.
Okay, well, we have another break coming up just shortly, but after that I'd like to ask you about dreams and other ways in which spirits connect with and comfort the living. I know you talk some about that in your new book, Destiny of Souls, so we'll be right back after this break. Doctor, before the break we're talking about dreams and other ways in which spirits connect with and comfort the living.
This is a really important aspect, I think, of information that I've received that I felt definitely had to be in the new book, and it was not in my first book. And one of the primary ways the newly departed soul uses to reach people who love them is through the dream state. I was asked when I was on the road giving so many speeches, please talk more about this aspect of your work. I think the grief that has overwhelmed the conscious mind when someone has lost a loved one has a way of shutting us down in terms of reception.
Yes.
But I want to assure your listeners that souls are very persistent in trying to get through to let their loved ones know that they're alive and well and to comfort them in a variety of ways. One of the ways in which they use to do this is in, of course, the dream state. Souls are quite capable of entering our dreams and inculcating themselves within the dreams or creating an entirely new dream, which includes them so that the dreamer can recognize that, in fact, their loved one is still very much alive and thinking of them. Now, people wonder about dreams, and I know that there's no one really knows scientifically what the stuff dreams are made of. We know that dreams involve cleaning house in our minds, that is, the stray thoughts and images of the day are filtered out, and I think there's a lot of nonsense to some dreams, that the circuits are just on overload and essentially we're venting.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, there is also two other parts of what I consider the essential dream state. One is problem solving. Many listeners, I'm sure, have gone to bed with a problem and in the morning they've got solutions. The other side is the spiritual side, and I've talked a little bit about that with souls reaching back to touch people that they have known and loved, but also our spirit guides are able to give us messages. You know, we'll say, for instance, gee, I have some intuition about this, or some insight that came to me in a flash when I was asleep or when I was just walking and meditating, and I don't know where it came from, but it's as if I'm being guided to do something, and I feel very strongly about this. Well, I think in cases like that, very oftentimes our guides are trying to help us. Some people feel that these are our guardian angels, and I feel that that's not a bad term to use for a loving guide. Each of us has our own personal guide teacher. And one of the most fascinating aspects, I think, of a hypnosis session is when that individual who I'm working with recognizes their guide for the first time, you know, in their current body. Mm-hmm. And they're able to describe who this individual is and what they look like and what kind of person they are. And it's a very emotional moment when they discover this. And in my practice, I use tape recordings so that people can have this to review later after they leave me.
Sure.
So I think dreams are very important, and I'm glad you brought it up, Mark.
Let's talk about the hierarchy of spiritual beings, what I call the heavenly host. You've mentioned the council of wise beings, spirit guides. Of course, there's angels. How do all those fit in?
Well, the thing is, our most immediate contact with a higher being is definitely our guides. You might argue that sometimes when people cross over, a very advanced, loving person who has been in our life, perhaps a favorite grandfather or someone, can meet us at the gate, and very soon our guides will join that individual. So there are people in our lives who are highly advanced to help us. But in the hierarchy, I don't particularly like that word, but it's a word that certainly describes the process, would next be our guides, and then a step or two above them would be that group of wise beings that I touched on a little earlier on the show. I call them the Council of Elders only because I hear the word council and the word elder so much.
Mm-hmm.
Others call them the Sacred Ones, as I said, the Wise Ones, or even things like the Committee. And what we do between lives, there is a point where we go before these wise beings, and they talk to us about our successes and our shortcomings and what we think we might do in the future. We talk about with them the opportunities that we had. We may or may not have taken advantage of those opportunities. And I think this is one of the most profound parts of my working with people, because this is not a court. These these elders, you know, are not judges. And I think there's a lot of misconception about that. This is not a tribunal or courtroom. They're called, you know, counselors or loving teachers, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not as if we go before them with our guys as defense attorneys to defend what we've done right and what we've done wrong. They're there to help us understand what we did in a former life and what we can do in the future. So
makes a lot of sense to me.
It's a very important aspect of our life between lives.
How about you, how about what do God and ascended masters like Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha fit into this?
Well, you know, these very wise beings who have come among us and who are great prophets, and I feel they are all great prophets, oftentimes a client will come and they will say, in deep hypnosis when we're first crossing over, I see Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very careful always with every client. I don't try to enter into what they're seeing in any other way but simply get them express what they're seeing. So I might say, let's get a little closer so we can take a more detailed look at this individual. And very soon they discovered that this, in fact, is their own personal teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this takes nothing away from the great teachers of the world, the Muhammads, the Buddhists, the Jesus, and people like Gandhi, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Only that these associations with very advanced beings who have done a great deal for the development of our civilization may have their own lives and their own agenda. In terms of our connection in the spirit world, we work with our personal teachers. So that's
okay.
What I have found, and it doesn't matter whether a person comes to me very deeply religious or a complete atheist. Once I have them deep into hypnosis in the spirit world, they pretty much all tell me the same thing.
Hmm.
I think that alone, Mark, was what captured my imagination and kept me going all these years.
Yes. Well, this is fascinating. I'm just sitting here soaking this up. How about, Doctor, the reason why certain souls would choose a physical body with an affliction, being retarded or paralyzed, etc.?
And that is a choice. And, you know, people will ask, why do you incarnate with a broken body? Now, it could happen that you would incarnate in a body that is already severely impaired, or you could be someone like the actor Steve Reeves, who had a very happy and successful life with a beautiful body until he fell off that horse and broke his neck. And so what is the difference between a soul that would choose that sort of double life and someone who comes in to a body that is having great difficulties right from the start? Oddly enough, there's not a great difference. Let me just mention a case that I just recently had. I had a subject who came from a very advanced group, and in her current life, she's a teacher for disabled children. Now, Josh is one of these children, and it, this is on my mind because this was my last case, so it's very fresh on my mind. And this boy is so disabled, he's unable to move or speak. In fact, she said he talks with facial expressions and has a wonderful smile. That's what she told me. Well, we found the soul of Josh is another member of my client's advanced soul group, and that his character, if you will, Mark, is a rather aggressive, domineering, action-oriented soul, and he needed to be in a physical life form, which forced him to be still and contemplative. So, you know, there are any number of reasons, and I wouldn't know unless I had someone in hypnosis who was talking about it, why a soul would choose to be in a body that is greatly impaired.
This makes so much common sense to me, and of course that was my feeling throughout reading your book. It just makes so much intuitive sense. It rings true to me. How about a hell? Does hell exist from your understanding, and what is it?
Well, you know, the interesting part about hell is this. I simply have never had any evidence of hell. I frankly come out right out and say it at my lectures. I don't believe in hell because no client of mine has ever experienced any such thing. And of course, sometimes a person who's a fundamentalist in my audience might say, yeah, but you haven't placed everybody in the world in hypnosis. And that's true. But what I have found, this is very interesting, within the last year, even the Catholic Church sees hell as a state and not a place.
Mm-hmm.
I found there was a wonderful article in the New York Times, if I could paraphrase, hell is not a place but a state, according to the Catholic Church these days. A person's state of being in which the person suffers from the deprivation of God. I think that's exactly what was stated.
Hmm.
And I think it was in a Jesuit magazine, and it was a very profound statement. I think that in the eyes of the church these days, hell is best understood as a condition of total alienation from all that is good. So they are softening too from the days when they all believed that hell was a place of fire and brimstone and we were all going to be punished and so forth. It just isn't the way of things. They wouldn't send us through to experience such a hard school on earth, the powers upstairs, and then turn around and, if we fail, send us down into a hell. It just wouldn't make sense to do that. Why would they punish us in this way when they're trying to advance our knowledge and to learn from our mistakes? You see, hell really doesn't make sense.
Sure.
And I think that for that reason, I was happy to see these articles in some of the religious magazines that are, people send me clippings and so forth. And I'm awfully glad to see that even the church is softening in this regard and realizing that what has gone before, there's no need to instill fear and terror in the minds and hearts of people.
I agree, and it's separated so many people from God, these hell and brimstone teachings. Certainly it's time to understand. Well, we're approaching a break, about another 30 seconds. When we come back, I'd like to ask you about ghosts from their perspective. That's something that fascinates me. We hear a lot about ghosts, what it's like for people who see them, or what's going on from their perspective. So we'll pick that up after the break. Again, we're listening to Dr. Michael Newton, PhD, author of Journey of Souls, and his latest book just out, Destiny of Souls. And again, these can be bought at any fine bookstore or can be purchased through the publisher by calling 1-800-THE-MOON. Llewellyn Publishing Company, and their website is www.llewellyn.com, LLEWELLYN. Dr. Newt, before the break, we're talking about ghosts and what's going on from their perspective.
Well, you know, many researchers into the paranormal, Mark, have written about ghosts, and I really don't consider myself an expert on ghosts, but I do have some exposure with souls who have been ghosts or who know ghosts. And so I've often been asked, how can benevolent spirit guides allow these beings to wander around lost and unhappy and alone? And I think that in Destiny of Souls, I devote a section to ghosts, and I think my contribution, hopefully, will be to review from the perspective of the ghost what this is all about and why they're doing what they're doing. I think in order to keep it brief, I'll just say this, because we have so little time left. Souls are not lost in some confined astral plane, not knowing that they haven't made a transition out of physical life on Earth. The ghost confusion lies in the obsessive attachment they have to places, people, and events where they can't let go for one reason or another. And there are special guides who constantly watch for these beings, and when they're ready to go home, they can go home. I have found, however, that ghosts are generally less mature spirits who have trouble freeing themselves from earthly contamination. So that's an aspect of this problem.
Very interesting. In the few moments we have remaining, what words of comfort, solace do you have for those who have lost loved ones, especially little children?
Well, the thing I want to get across about children, I can't imagine the pain of someone losing their child, because I have children and I've been very fortunate and they're healthy. But their people are so overcome with grief, they can't imagine that they could lose this dearest loved one of theirs. And why? How can there be any purpose to a world that would allow this to happen? What I have found is that the souls of children knew in advance that they were going to have very, very short lives.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them came to provide comfort for their parents. One of the interesting things that I find is that very oftentimes, if a young woman loses a child, that her next baby will have the soul of the first child.
Yes.
And this has been a great comfort to many people. But I think more than anything, I would like to assure your listeners that those souls knew in advance that it was going to be short, and that all of the parents of these children are going to see them again and be with them again and have other lives with them again. And so nothing is ever lost in terms of eternal love.
Beautiful. One last question. How would you like to be remembered?
Well, perhaps as a messenger of information that will make people aware that we do have a purpose, and that life does have meaning, and that we are here to work on our lessons and to be kind to others, and that eventually we will graduate, if I could use that word.
Yes. All right, well, Dr. Newton, thank you so much for joining us, especially on short notice. This has been a peak experience for me, and I know for the listeners. Ladies and gentlemen, again, trust me on this, and you know from the interview tonight, wise, wise work, important teaching, Destiny of Souls, and his first book, Journey of Souls. Thank you again, Dr. Newton, and God bless you for all your great work. Keep it up.
Well, thank you for having me, Mark.
This recording is copyrighted by Dr. Mark Pitstick. Any reproduction or duplication of this recording is strictly prohibited. For more information about Dr. Pitstick's books, CDs, or workshops, or to sign up for his free email newsletter, visit his interactive website at www.soulproof.com, or you can write him at Box 1604, Chillicothe, Ohio. That's Chillicothe, Ohio, zip 45601. Office phone is 740-775-2189, and the fax is 740-774-4478. Thanks very much for listening. This is the end of this recording.